Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. Are you ready for a snowstorm of global proportion? Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just hit your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
Hey, everybody. So there's a really special film out, and it's not in theaters yet, but the goal is for it to be in theaters. It is in film festivals. It's called Better Half. I like to describe the film as a dramatic take on a modern family, and I'm probably not the first person to describe it that way because that's truly what the film is. In this episode, I have filmmaker Michelle Clay. She's the writer and director of the film, and I have one of the co-stars of the film, Jamie Fouth, who plays Leo opposite Grant Landry, who plays Tony in the film. And the film is set in present-day Washington, D.C., and it's a contemporary drama about a young gay couple's evolution from partners to parents and the complications that an infant can create for a stable, thriving relationship. It is the story of an idealist and a pragmatist and how they use their love to push through differences of what they each truly want. Meanwhile, all their best laid plans are dwarfed in the face of what life has in store for them. So that's what we're looking at in today's episode.
I never thought that they would bring him back. Doesn't that tell you something?
Yep, that he's a bad penny.
Somebody left a baby today at St. Agnes.
He's not a crack baby. He's just an orphan in need of a home.
Our baby, Leo.
Do you mind if I have, like, a minute to get used to the idea?
Leo and I are thinking of adopting a baby.
I'm glad you're with my son, because I know you will put a stop to this baby nonsense.
Well, Tony's constantly talking about kids.
Yes, but you aren't. You like things exactly the way they are, don't you? I'm confident you will get Tony to see things your way.
This is a kid-free condo.
This is our baby Dylan.
Whatever Tony wants.
Tony, oh, yeah. True that.
That's the American dream, isn't it?
Right.
A house, 2.3 kids, and a German Shepherd. You know he's not a family man. He will be.
What happened?
Where have you been?
Someone was in trouble.
I was in trouble.
It took half the time you spent worrying about other people think about you and focus on what's wrong with our kid. Maybe you get better at this.
Come on, he's not going to leave you over that baby.
You should see him with this kid, Maya. It's like the whole world goes away.
Then talk to him.
And say what?
I'm heartless, selfish. You think I'm a coward?
I can't do this without you. You sure?
No.
Audio for the official trailer of Better Half. You can find the film and the trailer at, well, you can't find the film, but you can find the trailer at betterhalfthemovie.com, and I'll be back with Michelle and Jamie.
The snowstorm continues after this.
Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch. Rumptious dinners, serving fresh fish, perfect steaks.
pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Snow. Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California, and I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before, and I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs, housing, case management. Very unique in the nation that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert AIDS Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit desertaidsproject.org.
And now, on with the show. He's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and to media outlets throughout the world. He's an author, singer, songwriter, actor, and activist, and the executive producer and host of NicholasSnow.tv. He has created and continues to do so a snowstorm of global proportions dedicated to connecting the circuitry of humanity. And now, drifting into the studio and your life once again, Nicholas Snow.
Better Half is the second feature written, produced, and edited by Michelle Clay. She's a transplant of Baltimore, Maryland, and now calls Los Angeles home, where she has worked on network television, feature trailers, and most recently editing the awards-winning web series The Unwritten Rules and The Marriage Tour. Better Half is Michelle's first solo effort at directing a feature, but I can tell you from what I've seen, it will not be her last. Jamie Fouth can be seen featured in a number of television series like 24, NCIS, and The Newsroom, and he performed a small role in the Glenn Gaylord LGBT deportation drama, I Do. And his co-star Grant, who cannot be on the show with us, can be seen in the web series The Kavanaughs, on the Here TV series The Lair, and in Keith Hartman's superhero satire, Real Heroes. Now, generally, when I'm interviewing people, they're calling in from a variety of locations, but both Michelle and Jamie are in Jamie's living room right now. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I finally got to see your movie, your film, Michelle, and it's very unique, it's different, it's unexpected and surprising.
I'm really glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did. I did. That's all. Those are all meant to be positive reviews. And congratulations, Jamie, on your role as well.
Thank you so much. The very first time I read the script, I felt very possessive and competitive for the role. I was like, oh, I've got to do this.
How did you come to get the script and have a chance to even be in the film?
Well, very initially, I was submitting myself for a lot of roles. I had a commercial agent, but not a theatrical agent at the time. So I was looking at online role submission websites, and I am an openly gay man, and I love working on gay projects. So when I was reading the description for the initial teaser trailer, I was like, yes, absolutely, this is something I'd like to do. The little bit that I read was intriguing. And after we shot the sizzle trailer to try and get some interest going in the film, there was another audition for the actual film, and that was when Michelle asked me to come back and audition for it. She sent me the whole script so I could have an idea of the journey, and that was really when it kind of kicked in for me. I was like, okay, I've got to just fight tooth and nail for this.
Well, I'm glad you succeeded. And since I'm also an actor, I want to ask a follow-up question. So which online casting services do you use? I know of LA Casting, Actors Access, Backstage. Which ones do you find are most effective? And which one did you get this film through?
I got this through Actors Access, and I really like them actually kind of the best, to be honest with you. LA Casting seems to be a great sort of entry-level way to get into maybe some student projects or some non-union jobs. I think Actors Access has a lot more interesting and professional level opportunities.
Okay. And Michelle, since we got into this discussion of the casting of your film, how did you what is your take on how the casting of the film went in terms of? Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's kind of like what Jamie said. I was looking to shoot a trailer to try and raise some money, and I found two really great guys that had some chemistry, and I really liked them. You know, on set, they did a really lovely job. I always thought that once I got this on its feet in terms of actually shooting the feature, you know, that I'm like, these are my guys for right now. I'm going to find myself some actors that can commit to, like, doing the whole thing, because I was looking for a few different things in terms of the feature, and went through dozens and dozens of guys. And at the end of the day, you know, Jamie and Grant were the only two actors that felt like a couple. And I was really adamant about that. I was thinking, I'm not going to hire two actors. I'm going to hire a couple. And they were the only ones that felt like a couple, that felt like they had some history. So they were my guys.
I really appreciate that you did that, because there's so many times that, well, frankly, I think that in most films, LGBT films especially, when you're seeing so-called couples, you know by the way they're interacting that they're just not real. And I do believe that you achieved your goal of casting leading men that had authentic chemistry.
Thank you so much. I'm very proud of the work that they both did. They worked so hard.
One of the things that I was reading about your film is that you were having a conversation with someone, and the topic was, you know, there are no gay dramas. And basically, I think that the core of that conversation that you were having were that all of the stories seem to be the same. And you came up with something completely different. Would you like to talk about that process?
Way, way back, I first conceived of this film with a friend, actually, maybe in 2008. And at the time, it was true. There were no good gay dramas, dramas that were not gay-centric. You know, they weren't about coming out. They weren't about HIV. They weren't about, you know, discrimination and getting bashed. And being an African-American woman, I really relate to that because, you know, why can't you just be a person who is a member of a minority and just have a story evolve, and, you know, you're just the person that you are, that your demographic does not factor into the story. So that was kind of what I was trying to do. I was trying to find a story that was universal, that was truthful, and then have, you know, the LGBT factor be incidental. And, of course, you know, because, you know, Tony and Leo are gay men, there are going to be moments in the drama, as the story unfolds, that do come into the politics, you know, of being gay. So, but those things were incidental. Those things weren't the driving force of how the story unfolds.
There are aspects of this story that I think should remain a surprise for future audiences.
Thank you.
But at the end of the film, there's a dedication, which leads me to believe that the inspiration for this film might be based on a true story. Am I reading into that correctly?
This story is not based on that particular couple. but it's pretty much what happened to that couple. We have a producer in Baltimore. Her name is Kelly Pierce, and she was very good friends with a couple. Literally, as we were shooting this film, you know, they've been together for a long time. They waited a long time to have a child, and you know, not very long after they adopted a child, one of them succumbed to pneumonia. So I just felt like it was, you know, an appropriate homage, you know, to, you know, art imitating life.
Certainly. Now, you cast an infant. Now, was that one baby playing the part of the baby throughout the movie, or did you swap out babies?
We only had one baby. We had baby Avi. Her first day with us, she was just shy of 6 months. So she hit 6 months exactly at the time that we needed her, because there are politics with shooting with an infant. So 6 months is that critical point where you can actually shoot for a whole 2 hours with a child. You can shoot for 2 hours. You're going to have the baby on the set for five. But she was great. Her parents were great. She stayed pretty small throughout the course of the film, and kind of got big, you know, as we needed her to. There's a jump in time at the end of the film where she's appropriately big enough. But she was great. She was lovely. Her parents were really lovely. Much love to the Weber family, because they just supported us from day one.
Fantastic. Jamie, you have a lot of interaction with the baby in the film. And I was wondering, do you have much life experience with infants? And if not, how did you prepare for that?
I don't have a ton of experience with infants, but I actually love kids. So the challenge was not necessarily just in handling infants, which, yes, you know, I felt a certain responsibility to handle this amazing couple's real-life beautiful baby with tender love and affection, but also then switch it over to pretending as though I kind of really don't care for this child at all, and I'm not really comfortable with it in my life, and it's messing things up, and I'm actually, you know, just barely bubbling under with aggravation that I have to change a diaper, or that it's crying, or that I'm worried it's distracting my boyfriend from me. So it became the challenge I wanted it to be, which was the little actress, Avi Weber. She just was beyond adorable. But then I just got into that mindset of like, okay, this is my nightmare. And it was the minute they said cut, I could squeeze her and hug her and smile at her. But I love kids. I do some volunteer work with kids. I'm actually looking into possibly becoming a teacher in the future. So children aren't a complete foreign concept to me.
I had, Michelle, I had an actor on my show recently, and he was a writer, director, producer, actor in a film, and he and his co-star, what I loved about them is they're real believable guys. And I think that most LGBT films, that the leading men are just, you know, they're like the supermodels with shaved chests and everything else. And the two stars of the film are both very handsome, sexy guys, but they come across as real people. And I have to say that about your film as well. Your lead actors are sexy guys, but they're not the stereotypical magazine cover, sort of two-dimensional characters that we see in a lot of film. And I was wondering, was that a conscious decision or a happy happenstance?
It's absolutely a happy happenstance. I do get criticism sometimes, you know, that my guys are just too good-looking. You know, it's one of the things that incredibly, you know, takes people out of the film sometimes, you know, when they're first, you know, introduced to it, or they see the picture, like, these guys just look too good. But it was 100% audition. It was 100% chemistry between these guys. So
I definitely
go ahead, Jamie.
I was just going to say, I actually agree with you, Nicholas. I think that the large percentage of, you know, gay-focused films or gay-targeting films really will, you know, cast some, like, incredible eye candy. But it doesn't necessarily always ring true or connect, or it's, you know, sometimes it might even be at the sacrifice of some of the quality. But, yeah, I think that Grant and I are good-looking, but, like, normally good-looking. And something I'm really happy to hear you say is that you sense the chemistry between Grant and I. And the truth of the matter is we had known each other for a couple of years prior to the film because we both worked in the same bar for a little while. So we always had sort of a fun, playful behavior between us to begin with. And then getting to work together in the movie just sort of like cashed in on that. And I like that some people think maybe we are super sexy and hot. And then I'm glad that there are other people who are like, no, those guys look like people I know. And, you know, they don't have perfect bodies or, you know, they're not 21 years old. It's like, great. I that's what I loved about the script is that it just seems like, okay, this is something I think could happen in my life or a friend's life.
Well, you know, the other film that I'm talking about and your film, I believe the leading men are super sexy and hot. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I think in most LGBT cinema, there is a stereotype of what kind of guy is going to be super sexy and hot. And your film and the other film I'm referencing are complete departure from this stereotype that I think I know what I'm talking about. And I think it's extremely refreshing. I mean, I have to figure out how to have this conversation in a way that makes sense because I've tried it twice and it doesn't quite work because I'm never saying that you guys are not super sexy and hot. You are.
No, Nicholas, I get what you're saying. We're not Ken dolls, and that's great.
And another thing that I think is really interesting is, you know, as I tried to shop the script around, you know, to get someone to, you know, produce it with me, you know, and one of the things that surprised them in the script was the older partner is not the one that wants the baby. It's the younger partner that wants the baby, which was weird for them for some reason. But I guess that's another sort of storyline that plays out pretty frequently in these dramas as well.
Okay, I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, we can talk about whatever you want. And I'm loving this. I hope you are, too.
Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. The snowstorm continues after this.
Designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Area rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revival. Voted best of the Valley thrift store. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revival. Find it here. Visit us at revivalstores.com to find a Revival store near you.
Hey folks, mark your calendars for early November because it's time for Greater Palm Springs Pride, Southern California's popular and longest-running LGBT festival in the Coachella Valley. Palm Canyon Drive is closed to traffic and transformed into a vibrant, pedestrian-friendly Pride festival unique to Southern California. Palm Springs Pride is also one of the sponsoring organizations of the annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast, which takes place every year in May. Visit pspride.org.
The LGBT Community Center of the Desert is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enriching the lives of the LGBT community in the Valley through health and wellness, social and educational programs. The center advances its mission through a clinical counseling and internship program, senior programming, youth anti-bullying and suicide prevention support programs, a growing volunteer program, and signature special events in the community for its members and allies. For more information on the LGBT Community Center, visit them on the web at thecenterps.org.
Those paparazzi, they heard you two were going to be on my show, and they just won't leave us alone. So one of the things I love to ask filmmakers when they come on my show is what it was like for you the first time you were able to screen your film with an audience that was not predominantly comprised of friends and family, the first sort of neutral audience. What was it like to screen the film in that context? When and where was it, and how did it go?
Well, the very first public audience that we had was the very first festival that we got into after an 8-month wait and a long line of rejections. We finally got into North Carolina Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. That was back in August, and my sisters were with me. But other than that, it was pretty much, you know, a brand new, fresh audience. And as a filmmaker, I'm sitting in the back, and I am, you know, running the script in my head as it is playing in the audience, and seeing where they laugh, seeing where that they're quiet. You know, as a filmmaker, you kind of get a sense of, you know, where the audience sort of comes out of the film sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. where it's feeling long for them. So I really try to be aware of all that. And also me, because, you know, I'm just a one-woman show. You know, I made the DVD. I did post-production. So I'm like, oh, my God, is this DVD going to fail? Oh, my God, I didn't fix that thing with the sound. And for me, I was just never able to not have that director, producer hat on. Even when people laughed, even when things hit and landed like I wanted them to. So it was nerve-wracking. It was exciting. And it was really incredible to hear the applause afterwards. You know, because for a long time, you know, we've been trying to get this film out there. And when you're a filmmaker or you're an artist, you're thinking, and you don't get response to your work, you get this feeling of, is it just me? I mean, we made a good film, right? Didn't we make a good film? And why can't we get some response from it? And the first time we got that response, and the first time they applauded and they were really happy and hooping and hollering, it's like, okay, it's not just us. We were validated for the first time. So to answer your question, it was a real roller coaster ride, and it told me a lot about more work that I have to do on the film, but also, you know, that it's worth it to just keep pushing, keep trying to get it out there.
And Jamie, what about you? When was your first experience of a public screening?
Actually, it was just maybe a little over a month ago at Palm Springs Cinema Diverse Film Festival.
Okay, I was at that festival, but I didn't have the chance to see the screening there, which is why I wasn't there. But so how did that go for you?
For me, it's so, I mean, the fun thing about it is I have a kind of a not critical way of watching myself. It's like I just don't feel like I'm even looking at myself. One of the greatest compliments I've gotten from a director I worked with was that he said he saw none of me on the screen. He was like, you were fantastic, but there was no part of that person that was Jamie, which I love. But I watch it. I feel like I'm just watching a movie. I'm completely open to it. And then I hear people laughing, or actually even better, I hear some people crying and sniffing. And it is nice to be like, oh, right, that's really sad. Because I've lived with the script for years and the movie for years. It's great. And Michelle's being a little humble here, because the movie did win the Audience Award in North Carolina, so I can't imagine a better response than that.
Well, it also won an audience favorite here in Palm Springs, and I have to tell you, going into the festival, it was one of the most buzzed about, talked about film going into the festival here, and I wasn't surprised at all to learn that it had won an audience award based upon just the word of mouth. I didn't see it until last night myself, but that didn't surprise me at all.
That's so awesome. I mean, that's like it's the validation that Michelle was looking for, because, you know, the festival circuit, it's turned into such a crazy competitive game now, and everyone's got friends, and everyone's like, oh, well, there's a famous person attached to it. So it's even more of a struggle than ever for truly independent works to, like, elbow their way up there and get noticed. So the love from Palm Springs, the love from North Carolina, we're hoping that's, you know, just kicks off those first little dominoes that start a chain reaction.
Well, I hope that more and more people find this episode of my podcast. Michelle, I want you to educate me as a journalist and then perhaps ask the question. So the first question I have for you is, do you think this is an appropriate question to ask you? So you did identify yourself earlier in the show as an African-American woman, and I knew that about you because we've met in person, and anyone that sees the online layout of this episode would know that. So a question that I want to ask you is, are you inspired with someone like Shonda Rhimes? And the second part of the question is, am I in any way insulting you to ask you if a successful black woman inspires you? Am I in somehow lumping you together with someone in the way that I shouldn't?
It's not an inappropriate question to ask. I'm not offended by it. I'm actually flattered that you would, you know, that given what you've already said about the film, that you would, you know, put me in the same sentence. I think she is inspiring. I think that she is daring to do things that, you know, other people haven't dared to do. And yes, it's in the soap opera format, but still, I think we are in a good time in television, and she is, you know, she's pushing things forward. She's sort of creating a space, you know, where it's safe to be diverse, where it's safe to be a sexual person, or it's safe to have a sexual character. It's safe to be who you are, you know, and be honest about it, whatever color you are, whatever gender you are, whatever, you know, orientation you are. So I really love what she's doing. It's unfortunate the pressure that's put on her that she's the only one, but she's not the only one, you know. But I think some people see it that way. And if she can open the door for other folks, then that would be awesome.
I don't know if that was good. I just, you know, I always wonder if it's inappropriate to identify that what someone has in common with someone else and then ask them about that other person. I just always am concerned about, like, for example, I think Shonda Rhimes has said that she would rather not be known as a black female producer, that she'd rather just be known as a producer.
I've heard that, but at the same time, it's always hard to be the first, you know?
Certainly.
And I feel like she is the first, you know, so she's not going to say things perfectly, and if that's the way she feels, then that's great. But whether she likes it or not, she's the first, and everybody's going to point to her, you know?
Right.
Viola Davis is the first, and they're going to point to her. So I hope she works it out and things get a little better. But, you know, it's true that you don't want to be identified by your demographic, you know. But if your work is being seen and you're getting recognition, why complain? You know?
I gotcha. So, Jamie, you mentioned you're an out actor, and I'm wondering when you made a decision that that's how you would approach this business, as someone that was out and authentic and not worried about the Hollywood closet, or maybe you were worried about it and decided to go for it anyway.
No, I didn't worry about it only because I'd lived so much of my life as an out man. It really was, you know, by the time I started getting some TV work and I made Better Half, I was already sort of in my mid-30s, and that it just was kind of late in the game to try and squash it or jump through any hoops. And while I know that the struggle is real for gay actors, and, you know, I could point to Matt Bomer or Zachary Quinto or Neil Patrick Harris and say, hey, I would, in a heartbeat, happily do the Shonda Rhimes equation with any of them, and I'd be more than happy to be known as an openly gay actor and actually just do gay films, to be honest with you. That might be the one thing that does set me apart, is that I wouldn't be unhappy if I didn't get offered straight roles. I love getting gay stories out there. But like I was saying, so it was already sort of, you know, I wasn't going to be Brad Pitt. There wasn't any sort of gamble as like, oh, I wouldn't do that. You might not end up being, you know, Mark Wahlberg. It's like, well, the ship has already sailed on some of that, but I would have been thrilled to, I thought the TV show Looking was a fantastic vehicle for openly gay actors to do really modern, interesting stuff. And, you know, I think also being an openly gay actor means that maybe something like The Advocate or Out Magazine reaches out to you and says, hey, let's interview you or let's mention this. This is the new wave of actors who aren't playing around at all or not, you know, doing the closet thing for a minute. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a demerit. I'm proud, I'm married, you know, these are all great parts of my life.
Well, fantastic and well stated. I made a decision to be out of the closet. I came out in college in 1983 in Arizona, and I've been out ever since. And I know that I have had a whole different set of opportunities because of it, but I love the way that Hollywood is evolving, and I think it's great. I commend all of us who have chosen to be out of the closet in our pursuit of who we are in the world, and the world is a better place because of it.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Michelle, I'm going to ask you each this question, and Jamie will have a bit longer to think about it, but Michelle, was there a pivotal time or moment or experience in your life where you just got a lot of clarity about who you wanted to be in the world and move toward it?
To be honest, it was this film.
Really?
Yes. In 2010, I was living in my car, and I was pretty much at the end. It was very, very difficult to see anything good happening from that point on. And then someone took me in and gave me a couch, and I just sat and thought, you know, It's and this is kind of a downer, but it's I thought about just like, you know, just offing myself. I thought about how I was going to do it. I thought about when I was going to do it until I came to the realization that you're not here for you. You're here for the world. You're here for the effect that you're going to make on the world. So if you're okay with that, you know, that you can't have the life that you want, you know, because God has other plans for you. If you're okay with that, then you should keep going. You know, and I've always been an artist. I've always been a writer. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this one thing. And this is the thing that I am all in on, you know, to see if I'm supposed to be here, to see if I'm supposed to touch anybody's life. And, you know, and then I met Grant and Jamie. And then it took me a year to raise money, but we raised it. You know, and then we made a movie. And then I saw how it affected people. And then I knew I'm supposed to be here.
Wow. You know, you said that that's kind of a downer. It would have been a downer had you chosen to commit suicide when you were feeling those feelings. It is very inspiring because you saw your way through it and came out on top, and you've created a powerful work of art that will live forever. But when I hear this story, I'm not it explains something about you to me, because when I first met you in the parking lot after a screening at the film festival, and it wasn't the screening of your film, it was a screening of another film. But in our brief conversation, I learned that you were the director of the film Better Half. But my takeaway from those few minutes with you are, you're someone that's going to make it happen no matter what, and that you're just not going to stop moving toward what it is that you think is important. That is what I took away from you in just those few moments.
Yeah, it's a fairly recent, you know, mindset for me. You know, it really is. Because, you know, you get debilitated. You know, I've been in this business for like 20 years, you know, and when you come to the realization in this industry that it's not about talent, that's, you know, that's a killer. It kills your soul. It kills your hope, you know. So you have to find something else, you know, other than being good, you know, to push you forward, you know. And,
wow.
And I decided that doing good work, you know, and touching people was what my focus was going to be.
Wow. What about you, Jamie? Was there some sort of turning point or event or experience that sort of changed your destiny?
Just really quickly, I just want to say, you know, Michelle really is that person that you saw in the parking lot. I won't belabor it too much, but everything that the film came about because of every bit of blood, sweat, and tears the woman put into it. When I say that she physically would like stayed up through the night to make sandwiches for a cast and crew, she did. So she's the definition of a fighter, and the reason the movie exists really is her. As far as I'm concerned, you know, I feel like getting to be an actor was just such an amazingly self-indulgent sort of opportunity. I mean, granted, I'm not really paying any lip service to the nights and nights and years of bartending and waiting tables that I didn't necessarily always enjoy, just so I could keep my days free for auditions or, you know, actually book some jobs. But I got to live for myself for so long that when I started doing some volunteer work at a local elementary school, a public elementary school, and going to read to kids that had lost their librarians and their libraries through budget cuts, I started to get this sense of, like, as opposed to just sitting around during the day and being sort of resentful that there's nothing to do in terms of an audition, there was a place to go where, like, the kids actually really looked forward to seeing me. If I ever did miss a reading the next week, they would just be like, where were you? You know, or don't you remember that book you read 2 weeks ago about dinosaurs? I was, you know, like, the things I was doing for free in those classes mattered. And all of a sudden I started to, like, really realize, like, I love it. Even on the mornings that maybe I was getting up, I'm like, oh, gosh, I really don't feel like going in and doing this. I always left feeling like a rock star. Like, I know that sounds very kind of Pollyanna, but, like, truly I would always leave being like, wow, I kind of feel awesome because those kids appreciate what I'm doing so much. And so as opposed to all the great me time I had pursuing being an actor, the volunteer work and the stuff I've been looking into as far as being a teacher's assistant, it's all been very, a little bit of a turning point in that, like, I do have a lot of myself to sort of just give, and I want to give, and it's the payback is just the kids kind of being too cute, for lack of a more eloquent way of putting it.
I love that. I love that. You know, given how deeply you both shared about yourself, you know, my personal mission statement is to honor and express my creativity in a way that makes a difference. That's if everything I do can fall into that mission, and it is great when you follow your dreams. And in my show, I like to have people on that will inspire my listeners to look within themselves and to give themselves permission to identify and follow their dreams. And both of you are a testimony to that.
Thank you
so
much.
Thank you. That's really wonderful.
Is there anything that you would like to talk about that I have not evoked with a question? Let's go with you first, Michelle.
I guess right now I'm really focused on trying to get the movie out there. So if anybody's seen the trailer, if anybody has friends, hands in a film festival, we would really love to come share our film with your community. I can't tell you how many people have, how many festivals have turned us down, and I can't reconcile it with the reaction I get when we do get in front of an audience. So just know that we are trying to get to you, and we hope that, you know, you'll have a positive experience when we do get to you. And thank you so much for this time, Nicholas. That's all I can say. It's a real pleasure.
Oh, listen, it's my pleasure. And Jamie, is there anything you would like to add that I have not evoked with a question?
No, I'll just piggyback on what Michelle said, which was the thing that appealed to me so much in the script, the thing that made me so hungry for it, is the thing that I think is connecting with the audiences in North Carolina,
mm-hmm,
to Palm Springs. Pretty diverse audiences, but still people are saying, hey, you know what was really great? That was a story that the two leads happened to be gay, And it only sort of became a political thing towards the end, because it is important for us to remember that even though things are great and things are getting better, there are still those forces outside that are working to keep minorities, to keep those who are different down. And it's, you know, it's just very easy to kind of forget, especially if you live in a major city like New York or L.A. You think, oh, everything's great, and everyone I know is great.
Right.
And, you know, and I think Leo and Tony are very modern characters in that most of the stuff is great. They are, you know, this isn't the sad gay story. This is sort of the real life story that I think a straight couple can go see and be like, wow, that could have been us if things didn't go the way we wanted. Or, you know, so at the end of the day, it's like getting into festivals, and I love seeing the people in North Carolina, and I hope festivals in New York City and in Dallas and in Hawaii and Sydney, Australia, where my co-star Grant lives now. I think they're all going to see it and be like, wow, that's modern and important. And that's what I liked about the movie in the first place.
Well, even though we couldn't work out the broadcast for Grant to join this broadcast, please let him know he's welcome to come on a future show at a time that's just right for him.
Well,
we can make
awesome.
That happen.
Thank you so much.
Oh, he'd love that. That's really cool.
So your website, betterhalfthemovie.com. Congratulations to both of you, and thank you for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. It's been awesome.
My pleasure. So I will share a link to this podcast to my Facebook pages in within 10 to 15 minutes after the broadcast concludes. And maybe this episode will make it to the Huffington Post. I don't have control over that. But anyone listening can share it with lots of people, and I invite you to do that. Once again, go to betterhalfthemovie.com, betterhalfthemovie.com. It's a very extensive website, and I love it. You know, I actually talked about this during the interview, but I just found the spot on the betterhalfthemovie.com website that I wanted to reference again. So Michelle writes, a few years back, a good friend told me that there are no good gay dramas. Where are the films featuring gay people without gay issues attached to their personal stories? The field is wide and the selections are rare even now, several years after we first had that conversation. Yes, gays and lesbians do have a unique set of challenges in dealing with coming out, discrimination, social inequality, bashing, and the effect of the HIV/AIDS epidemic has had on their community. And no, gay life is not just about raves and sexcapades, pride parades, and drag shows. The LGBTQ community has countless undiscovered stories to tell. There are stories of love and laughter, of human connection, and the daily grind of living in between. I want to make this film, says Michelle, because this is a story I've never seen on film. The time has come to see gay family life depicted on its own terms. It's time for a story about everyday folk whose lives are not the filler for the perspective of featured straight characters. And she concludes, Better Half is the story that's missing in the landscape of gay cinema. And with that, I'm going to once again feature the audio of the trailer of the film.
I never thought that they would bring him back. Doesn't that tell you something?
Yep, that he's a bad penny.
Somebody left a baby today at St. Agnes.
He's not a crack baby. He's just an orphan in need of a home.
He's our baby, Leo.
Do you mind if I have, like, a minute to get used to the idea?
Leo and I are thinking of adopting a baby.
I'm glad you're with my son, because I know you will put a stop to this baby nonsense.
Well, Tony's constantly talking about kids.
Yes, but you aren't. You like things exactly the way they are, don't you? I'm confident you will get Tony to see things your way.
This is a kid-free condo.
This is our baby Dylan.
Whatever Tony wants.
Oh yeah.
True that.
That's the American dream, isn't it?
Right.
A house, 2.3 kids, and a German Shepherd. You know he's not a family man.
He will be.
What happened?
Where have you been?
Someone was in trouble.
I was in trouble.
It's like half the time you spend worrying about other people think about you and focus on what's wrong with our kid. Maybe you get better at this.
Come on, he's not going to leave you over that baby.
You should see him with this kid, Maya. It's like the whole world goes away.
Then talk to him.
And say what?
I'm heartless, selfish, I think I'm a coward.
I can't do this without you.
You sure?
No.
BetterHalfTheMovie.com.
We are, in fact, connecting the circuitry of humanity. All of us connected. Please continue to connect with Nicholas Snow on Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, Instagram, Google Plus, and other social networks. Everything Nicholas Snow is available at NicholasSnow.com. For our video programming, check out NicholasSnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes, or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. This program is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. Thank you for being a part of the Snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.